Well, happy new year to you, Rob.
Happy new year, Jersey.
Yes, this is the first Lean Into Art cast of 2013. And what is the Lean Into Art cast? It is a live video and audio show. It's in audio form and video film where you can watch and listen to two visual storytellers take on a somewhat complex and difficult topic, usually starting out with a curveball to mentally warm ourselves up. Then we zoom out at 10,000 feet to discuss the main topic in abstract. Then we hit the ground running with some practical, useful tools, tips, and techniques. And then we usually close out with a little thing called takeaway, a little reflection on our art week. But we got something new that we're introducing this episode, which you'll have to stay tuned for, be revealed at the end. You're introducing a new feature. Hi, I'm Jersey Drozd.
Hi, I am Rob Stenzinger.
And new year, new curveball. Do you want to just dive into curveball?
Yeah, let's jump into it. Yeah, we like to start these podcasts out with a curveball. I mean, it's in a way, it's like a mini version of the whole podcast inside the podcast.
How long and do we suppose, give ourselves for this?
Well, we normally target between 5 to 15 minutes. Once in a while, we kind of know when a curveball has more curve. And I think this is a pretty easy one though. Let's start the new year off, at a gentle stroll and
it's more of a softball than a curveball.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. It depends. I don't know. We'll see how much of a hot button or
I'm still suffering from a cold, Rob, so it could be that even a softball might be a curveball to me.
Now, funny? What? That's exactly what my curveball is about. Yeah. So when you're sick and you have deadlines, I'm wondering what sort of strategies do you use to help deal with that? Because, it's really tough. I mean, no matter what, with either a day jobs, you know, kind of strategies, you know, a continuous employer or being independent, either way. I mean, once in a while, your body says, you know what, that virus thing, I caught it and I'm not ready to do this thing you committed me to. But at the same time, there's contracts or there's things on the line. What are some strategies you use to deal with that?
To deal with it. Okay. Yeah. I'm glad that you used that terminology because I don't think there's any way to beat it. I don't think there's any way to prevent it from happening. You're going to get sick. From time
what?
To time.
Isn't there three simple steps to always perfectly to perfect manage health? It?
Yeah. No. Yeah. It's called the Atkins diet. Worked for everybody, right?
Worked for Mr. Atkins. Ooh.
No, I mean, there's always somebody coming along with like some new strategy of like, oh, this is a way to stay in perfect health and whatnot. But I think that if you engage in interacting with human beings, you're probably going to get sick, right?
Oh, yeah. Tabling. Come to think of it. Speaking of interacting with human beings, I mean, there's a, prime opportunity.
Is what they call it. And I got Conrad this year. And then I got the flu in November. And then end of December, I got a nasty head cold, upper chest kind of thing.
No fun.
No, not really. And I don't want to complain about it too much. It's just that, you know, it just means that I'm going to be like dialing down my volume while I'm hacking every once in a while. Nobody wants to listen to that. But how do you deal with it? Well, okay. First thing, I try to be proactive about it. So like the moment I feel something coming on, like, oh, the joints are feeling a little weird or, oh, I'm feeling a little, you know, kind of dizzy. Bam, I just try to nuke that thing with as much vitamin and, vegetable and fruit juice as I possibly can. So I've got a vegetable juicer, you know, like the Juice Man Jr. kind of thing that the guy with the giant eyebrows used or promoted. And the first thing I did was I ran out and I was like, okay, I'm getting green peppers, I'm getting carrots, I'm getting celery, I'm getting kale, I'm getting, you know, all these apples, oranges, and I was just juicing like crazy to just hit my system with as much vitamins as I possibly could. And then, you know, taking the zinc and everything. So trying to cut it off at the pass and shorten the duration as much as possible. And for the most part, I think I did a good job of it because I only think I had a fever like one day. And then it's mostly just been a congestion problem. Congestion or, you know, sinus problems, you can still get a lot of work done because you're not feeling dizzy and loopy and weird, right? You're just feeling kind of, you know, uncomfortable. So I try to do that to keep the duration of like the really bad part of the sickness in check. And then the other thing is like, man, and you're talking about dealing with it. When you got a deadline, it's a deadline. And you know, it's like, I've got 8 hours to finish this thing. And the only way I'm going to be able to do it is if I stay up all night and make myself feel worse. Well, you know, I've been there. You've been there, right, Rob?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Stay up.
Yeah. I mean, I will once in a while try to, you know, pull the Kobayashi Maru if it's a soft deadline or if it's not as, it depends on what the milestone is on the project.
Yeah.
And I will try to use, convenient coincidence. If other people are very busy on the project, I'll say, hey, would such and such a day be better?
Yeah. Yeah.
And offer the positive out. Yep. And, then if that works, then everyone doesn't need to be all chatting about how sick I am or not. And then yep. We just silently get better and, meet the deadline.
Yeah. And the other thing, I mean, in that, you know, talking about Kobayashi Maru, for those who don't know what that means, that's cheating at life's tests because you don't like to lose and you bite an apple when you say that. another thing that I've done as a way to protect myself and give myself more time so I'm not in that situation very often is I make it a habit to, if I have any control over when the item is to be delivered for a freelance job, like if they say, when can you have it done? Mm-hmm. I'll always give myself 3 to 4 extra days on the deadline if I can, right? Like, so I'll say like, oh, I know personally that if I worked really hard, I can get it done by the 15th. I'm going to say the 19th or 20th. And if they're cool with that, then I've got 4 days of wiggle room in there. And if nothing bad happens, I deliver early and I look like a champ, right? Like, oh, well, mm-hmm. You know what? Here it is 2 days early. Look at that. How about that? Isn't that great? But if I do need those extra days, like, and if I do get sick, then I can take naps and something, you know, when the dizziness kicks in, when you got a bad fever, oh man, a couple hour nap will do so much to help keep you running at the desk rather than trying to push through and burn through, right?
Oh yeah.
But I mean, I really don't think that I abuse myself that badly. I tend to get a lot of sleep for a freelance cartoonist. I do eat pretty good, but I still manage to get sick. So mm-hmm. I think it's just something that just happens. And so just try to.
Oh yeah, exactly. And this wasn't like a way to pick on you, but I thought, well, one of the things we use with curveballs is, well, we know, I mean, I would say we each have used our prior knowledge on things that we've, you know, either of us have been dealing with or whatnot. And, mm-hmm. that is mighty good curveball ingredient making. So that's a spicy meatball.
So with that, is it time to kick? Oh, well, no, we got to, before we leave curveballs, if any of you guys watching or listening, if you want to throw a curveball at us, there's a handy form on the Lean Into Art website, leanintoart.com, where you can contact us and you just fill out the form. You can send us, you know, your own question to try to stump us or get us intellectually warmed up. And then there's a field in there to click, right, Rob, to give us permission to read it on the air.
Exactly. And, that we let's see. So we may read on the air, but, the actual permission thing is specifically your name. We like to give you credit and give you a shout out as far as, you know, where do you live on the web, right? You know, give us your URL and we put it in the show notes.
Absolutely. If you're going to take the time to interact with us, then we would like to honor your participation by giving you a shout out on the show. Mm-hmm. Unless you don't want us to mention your name, and you can say that in the email when you contact us. So that's at leanintoart.com. I also want to say thank you to everybody who participated in the season of creative challenges this past winter. We just closed out the big sale, or rather, Rob, you did. You flipped the switches on that. And a lot of participation, a lot of people taking advantage of that big sale that we ran. So thank you, everybody who did that. Thanks for all of your support. And I hope you guys liked what you found there. We'd love to hear from you on what you liked, what you didn't like, what was strong, what could use a little bit of tweaking. You can email us at leanintoart@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you on that. But if you're just satisfied and you're just waiting for the next sale or waiting for the next class to open up, that's awesome too. Either way, we thank you guys very much. don't know if you had anything you want to throw on top of that, Rob.
You just made me think I should put together a new survey because I mean, actually any form, the feedback's awesome. I mean, ping us on Twitter, send us an email. You know, of course the contact form at Lean Into Art. There's also like, if we, you know, once you do, for anyone who does sign up and becomes a member, that, you know, you get a login for the website, and there is a standard link on the right side that is a mechanism to give feedback on any workshop you take. So it's, it should be familiar. If you've ever attended a conference or gone to a seminar, it's that kind of survey. You know, we're just trying to, you know, look for the, strengths and areas to improve when it comes to, material or techniques for any of us, any of the instructors. And, that includes Jersey and myself.
Mm-hmm. So cool. Well, with that, I think we can go ahead and say it's time to hit main topic. Fly 10,000 feet up, hit the stratosphere, and look at our main topic in the abstract. Try to pick it apart. Look at the whys before we dive into the hows.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think we're going a little bit about picking a topic that's a little bit of a timely topic. Last episode, the last one of 2012. We were talking about reflecting on 2012 and planning for 2013. Presumably, we made some plans after that. And now it's time to stretch ourselves and limber up before we dive into this big thing, right?
Oh, yeah. I find sometimes it's a matter of... it's a common situation for me to be in any time of the year to have a big old task list. And sometimes some tasks, I mean, there's like a big context switch where all of a sudden in one area I am, for a lot of us, I mean, you go from day job to other creative pursuits. That's a giant context switch. Or you go from family to creative pursuits, or you go from, you know, friends to create, you know, that switching alone, I think can cause a need potentially as far as limbering up.
Oh yeah. Rather than just diving in cold, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then even perhaps even more so if you've gone through like a yearly ritual and set all sorts of audacious goals.
Well, that's the, hold on, sorry, excuse me.
No problem.
you reminded me of part of the inspiration for this topic is that, you know, over the last couple of weeks, as I'm sure anybody who spent any time on the internet has noticed, is that you get bombarded with top 10, 25 this, top 10 that of resolutions, ways to think about the new year, big, bombastic, fire up the troops kinds of articles and essays on how to, you know, eye of the tiger, dive into the next year and tear it apart. And they have their use, right?
Right.
They get you fired up.
Yeah.
One in particular that I came across that was part of the inspiration for this was the Terrible Minds blog. What is this writer's name? Chuck Wendig. And yeah. I'll put a link in the show notes for this. This is at 2012, December 31st, 25 writer resolutions for 2013. And it's all this kind of stuff. Level up, ding. Let art and entertainment have a little creative love, baby. Cleave to the human condition. Face the fear. Best the beast. Have a effing point. Embrace the unanswerable. Stop letting passion ferment into poison. And he goes on to explain what all these different expressions mean. And by the end of it, you're like, yeah, I'm going to go beat the heck out of 2013, right? But there's a problem. This is great to get you all motivated. But if you sat down and you come up with like, I'm going to make 12 graphic novels next year and I'm going to eat 3 turkeys a day and all these big, gigantic goals.
Okay.
problems arise, at least for me. I can speak from my own experience. You know, like you sit down to do the work and you don't know where to begin. I'm doing a graphic novel this year, 2013. Oh my gosh, I don't know where to start. Or I have the desire but not the ideas. I sit down and I go, oh man, I'm so excited after reading that article. Chuck got me so fired up about this. And now all I need is a good idea for a story. Chirp, 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 right? Or you sit down cold, you know, it's like, oh, I'm gonna get to work today. The clock said ding, and I'm working from this time to this time, got it scheduled, and I start throwing down lines on the page, and oh, that didn't turn out good. Erase, erase, erase. All right, I'm gonna try it this way. Erase, erase, erase. Oh, that didn't work either. Erase, erase, erase. Oh my gosh, forget it. I'm a hack. This is a little bit like work. This isn't joyful at all. Or, you know, the other one people throw out there is, I don't have any inspiration. I don't know, you know, I want to do this comics thing or this visual storytelling thing. I want to be a writer, but nothing's grabbing me. Nothing's making me. So, okay. That's where limbering up comes into this, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm actually really glad you framed up the whole issue in that kind of a global sense, because part of it, the limbering up is kind of this thin slice as far as before you start to act on a project and then to get you to now start acting on it. But then as soon as I back up just a little bit, all of a sudden, all the issues like you started to name, they come up that, you know, things that are almost, back at, like I'm back to square one related to planning. Did I choose the right things? What floats my boat kind of problems. And, to me, it's almost like it's limbering up is this little point at the peak of a pretty freaking steep hill. And then I can, you know, if I'm ready to cross that threshold, I can. And when I'm in there, that I get some benefit from the limbering up practice. But like, but wow, there's a lot of territory before that. And I can easily just slip right down that deep slope.
Yeah.
And, you know. Which to me, then I'm dealing with a bunch of other things besides limbering up. It's like, man, I can't even get back to that.
Yeah. So, I mean,
it's big.
There are a few things worse than sitting down to do the work and it doesn't go right the first couple times. And after the third time you erase the thing, not only are you looking at that clock going, I put 45 minutes, 2 hours into this already and I'm still nowhere. So now you got like the wasted time, which you feel regret about, right? Mm-hmm. Whether we should or not, I'm not placing a value judgment on that regret. It just happens. And then you also have the creeping dread of, oh my gosh, maybe I don't have what it takes, right? I'm never going to land this 3-point perspective shot. I'm never going to land this 3-quarter down shot looking at a character looking up at the camera. You know, those kind of things, like they haunt you after a while and they take the wind out of your sails, right? So then you can read all the 25 tips for writers in the world. You can listen to, you know, the entire Rocky soundtrack, the Karate Kid soundtrack, the Bloodsport soundtrack over and over and over again. And it's still not going to get you back into it, right?
Don't forget to mention the double impact soundtrack.
Oh, yeah, see?
Yep. And you got to feel the impact of my soul.
This is the Rob Stenzinger of your kick your butt into art playlist.
Yeah, man, I had to look for that soundtrack one day. I found it on YouTube and that was the best I could do.
So. Oh no.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yeah. So like, you know, all of the motivational speaking in the world can't help you when you're fighting all those battles as well. Right. So true. it's not about tricking yourself or mollycoddling yourself into feeling, oh, I'm happy, I'm going to draw. But it's about creating a rhythm and psychology is part of that rhythm, right? And limbering up kind of prepares you mentally in a lot of ways, as we'll explore when we get to On the Ground. But, you know, to be all dumb and crass and teacher-like or pedantic maybe, use a metaphor, right? In athletics, you don't just, I participated in some sports and when I was in track, you didn't just get off the bus and start running hurdles, right? You stretched out.
That's, well, you reminded me, it's, there's a, the the comically inspiring speech by the coach in the first American Pie movie. You don't score until you score kind of thing. Oh. Yeah. I don't know what that was, lacrosse or something. Anyway. Another thing I'm seeing as far as some of the concerns you're mentioning, I some of these concerns I think are points of friction, and I think this probably is still a 10,000 feet up observation before we dive in, but it's a little bit on the threshold of characterizing it to be able to dive in and diagnose. Mm-hmm. And I'm just gonna I don't even have a good way to paraphrase it. I'm just going to use the classic definitions of like, do you have friction related to body, mind, or spirit? Or another two I'll add to that is one is awareness and the other one's skill. Mm. So 5 different points of friction.
Okay, cool. That, so, you know, awareness and skill.
Mm-hmm.
So my first question for you, Rob, and this is when we're still discussing this in abstract. How does engaging in a simple warm-up activity change your thinking or attitude towards the project you're working on? How are you different after doing a warm-up before, or any kind of limbering up activity?
I would say it's the, you're trying to put yourself through, you're trying to push yourself past a manageable threshold where you knew that before you started your workout, your muscles felt tight. And then by warming up, you no longer feel that and therefore feel better prepared for what you're about to face. So in a way, it's like a mini version or a safe challenge that represents the bigger challenge. Is that kind of what you're?
Yeah. And then actually, it's like, it reminds me a lot of how in, I was just talking about this with some friends and they were complaining about this, but I totally see the value of this thing is in video games. Now there's like, a lot of video games take great pains to train you on how to play the game. The early levels are hit the C button to pick this rock up, shake the controller to lift the rock, you know, and like they're walking you through. And in while they're doing this, there's no bad guys coming at you, right? It's just you and the rock. And it's just like this training session. And then stage
unless
two,
the game's Demon's Souls, but.
Oh, I've never played that one. But okay. Well, see, I tend to play games aimed at 6-year-olds. But we'll talk.
I would want to see that 6-year-old that's playing that game. I don't know. But yeah. Anyway.
But what I'm saying is, like, you know, like this training session is, it's low risk, right? And it's just you learning this particular thing. And now when you get to stage two, now you're going to have to lift that rock and throw it while 40, 50 spiders come at you at once, right? So now yep. You're ready for like the real thing. But yeah, you talk about those points of friction. You said body, mind,
spirit, classic three there, and awareness, and skill.
Oh, awareness. What do you mean by awareness?
Let's see. Awareness is a little bit of a, it's like the orchestrating, point of friction where maybe you haven't figured out where the friction is. And that is a slightly meta, but being able to manage and assign and have that sort of, you know, executive focus over the process to notice, hey, wait a minute, I'm stuck. And, you know, if you do that like 2, 5, 10 minutes before you're very deep into a time session that you've dedicated to accomplish something, well, the awareness is going to be your friend. And I think it's a separate concern than the others. So
I think that was a nice way of putting it. I think you summarized that really nice, really well. Okay. This is my final question for this particular segment of the show. Can you over warm up? Can you overdo it? If so, when do you know?
This is, I think that's really, really close to the thought of practice versus execution, or, you know, working on a sample of the thing versus the thing.
I specifically chose this point because I listened to your latest Polytechnicast, recursive journaling.
Yeah.
And how many Polytechnicasts did you say you had behind you that you had not shared with the public?
It's way too much. It's silly, honestly. It's probably, I think it's somewhere between, I don't know, let's split the difference and say 60.
Wow.
It's somewhere in there. I don't know. I mean, it's, yeah, it's a lot.
So, yeah, when is that too much practicing? Because, I mean, it paid off. It paid off. If you listen to early Polytechnicasts and you listen to that one, you are a lot more comfortable talking to nobody, right? Because that's what you're doing when you're podcasting by yourself, right? You're talking to nobody, but you're talking to somebody, but there's nobody immediately there is what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where you can see someone doing this, like, I mean, in stories and movies, the video recording of, Princess Leia. I mean, she was talking to, she was recording a message on R2-D2, like an answering machine, but but you're not talking directly to someone, which is weird. Right. And there's so much about that whole task that is weird and foreign to me.
Oh yeah. No, I'm right there with you. But I was thinking about how, 60 something shows that you recorded didn't share. Now that's practice. That's sketching, right? You did sketches. Yep. But when do you stop sketching? When is it time to just get the thing done, right? Is it a ticking clock thing? Is it an awareness thing? I'm just curious if you have any inner barometer to know that I'm warming up for the sake of staying safe right now and not to get myself in a mindset to execute.
So what you're describing is a heuristic that I think is personal to everyone. And you may have a whole bunch of them. For me, I have, and I think it maps back to the awareness set of concerns where, when do you realize this thing that it isn't going in the direction that you want? And how do you, decide then which other direction to steer in? For me, it's a ball of hate. No, but seriously, it's a little bit of frustration where I'm like, you know what? Dang it. This isn't the correct path. I got to figure this out. And then that typically, I try not to go too far with that because it's really easy to then just try to, beat yourself up.
Oh, I know. Yeah. No, I was just today I was having a conversation with a friend about how, I made somebody that I care about very angry with me. Or maybe not very angry, but they were annoyed with me because of something I did. And, it was a splash of cold water in my face to make me go, you know what? I shouldn't do that ever again if I can help it, And my buddy, as I was talking about it with him, he was saying, he's like, you sound pretty happy about this situation. He's like, you should feel like some regret or remorse about it. I'm like, well, I kind of do, but at the same time, I love it when I get an opportunity to learn something really, really hard like that. It's like, it's instead of sitting around feeling bad about it, getting that whole like, whoa moment, what are you doing, kid moment, is a great way to figure out that you're not on track and this is the track you should be on. I don't know if that's too ABC family, but
A little bit of humility can feel pretty good. Versus, I guess, is that the difference between humility and humble pie?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe.
One thing, so I benefit a lot from my wife's study in psychology and getting her master's degree. And I ask her questions all the time. She's a continual resource for me. And I, one thing that I was asking her about guilt at one point, and in her studies in the Adlerian School of Psychology, is that guilt, and which sounds pretty related to this whole like kind of regret and all that, it has to do with something that we feel bad about, yet we know we'll repeat it. And so, if you're at peace with learning the thing, then I don't see why guilt would need to be present.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess that's a good way of putting it, right? It's like, I felt bad that I made my friend annoyed, but I was delighted that like, oh, but this showed me that I was doing something really, really dumb that I don't want to do anymore. And now I'll course correct. Learning the hard way like that makes the learning a lot more permanent sometimes. But anyway, I don't know how we got off on that. Do you want to hit the ground, Rob?
Oh yeah.
All right. Well, here we go. We're gonna hit the ground hard.
It's kind of scary.
Pizza trouble. The chat. Oh. And she says, okay, guilt is something you feel bad about that you'll do again. Yeah. So,
yep.
Were you reading from that when you?
No. What's funny is, like usual, this is something that a little bit of inside baseball about the show is my chat often freezes like within 5 minutes after the show starts, and I can no longer. I wish I could see what everyone was saying, but
nope. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll keep my eye on it and relay it to you. So now we are on the ground. That scary music indicated that it is time for us to go on the ground where we talk about practical applications of this topic. So what if we understand the values of doing warm-ups, if we don't know what warm-ups to do or want ones that at least ones to consider, ones to serve as examples for us to explore in exploring our own limbering up warm-ups for taking on big projects. Now, I've got a handful of different things here that range from an activity to do to software I use coupled with an activity, and even some kind of abstract thoughts on sketching and note-taking. Mm-hmm. But I want to let you start with this, Rob, because you said that you had a few things that you jotted down on your note cards that I can't see.
Well, okay. It really relates to those five different areas of I thought, let's see, limbering up. So why would you do it? Because someone who has mastered that task recommends it, right? Like there are certain guitar related stretches that I do because I watched a video by John Petrucci. He's a guitarist for Dream Theater. And he's incredibly fast, very skilled guitarist. He has a really, you know, sort of a lot of strict regimentation, as far as how he approaches it and whatnot. And I thought, oh, really interesting. He showed like a bunch of, you know, his advanced level in that, in that realm of guitar, you know, he was able to say, you know what, there's some ergonomic concerns here. You know, you're about to start practicing. You're going to have to, physically get ready to do this task. And here's some advice as far as, not getting repetitive stress injuries and whatnot. So, I mean, for, you know, the warming up, that would be, related to the, you know, so here, the five buckets, I mean, I realize that there's definitely a body bucket related to, am I physically ready to do this task? And of course, if it's a physical related task, then, which I don't know, which there's not many that aren't.
Right. Yeah. You know, like even writing, you know, we started out this one with the curveball of being sick. Mm-hmm. And you ever try writing when you're not feeling good, Rob, when you got like a bad fever or you're on like cold medication? Man, that's
bad. Yeah, it doesn't happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's funny. I was thinking about that, like not to be like all like, oh, the freelancer has it the hardest, but it's like when I was a corporate graphic designer, if I didn't feel that good, I could sort of fake my way through the day, right? I could do like a 60% job and still earn my money. Mm-hmm. But when you're doing freelance illustration or storyboarding or character design, and you sit down and you're going like this kind of thing, you know, you're not going to do anything that anybody's going to want to pay for.
No.
So the hours are better, but man, those hours count so much more sometimes.
Well, yeah. And you're often as far as in the chain of steps or in the ecosystem of delivering that main product that you're serving, you're often like a single point of failure when you're an independent. And sometimes you are in a corporate job setting.
Well, depending on the job that you do. Yeah. I'm talking about being like an entry level graphic designer in a real estate magazine. Not a lot of heads around the line. It's just like, you know, make the house look nice and put them in a grid. My job was very it was stressful in other ways. But anyway, that's another story for another time. But you're talking about the body, right? Like inking, getting ready, sitting down just to ink, whether I'm using a crow quill or a brush, I got to get that arm, you know, stretched out and flexible. I don't know how many times I've made the mistake of sitting down, like literally right after waking up, right? I get up, I make coffee, give my wife a kiss as she goes off to work, and then I go down to the desk and, all right, got to ink this page. And then I throw down the first line. Oh, that sucks. Throw down another line. Oh, no, I'm going to have to break out a lot of white out for this one, you know, because my arm isn't ready yet. The muscles aren't, you know. So you do warm-up sketches. Which is one of the things I had on my list, and I got. But the body is just one of those points of friction that get.
Sure, and some activities warm up more than one area of concern, like warm up sketches. That totally could get you ready with body, skill, mind, spirit, awareness. I mean, awareness, everything. Honestly, that's like you're executing a representative, small, safe task. Essentially like one thing I just wrote down during, you know, something you said, a bit ago was, it was almost like we're making small commitments to then do something, a big commitment.
Mm. Yeah.
And the next small commitment is the warm up, you know, and it kind of is a commitment too, because choosing to do that before you jump into the task, it seems like, well, am I just wasting time? So, you know, I know how to do this. I've done it 1,000 times before.
I know. Oh my gosh. That's why I didn't do it for the longest time. For the longest time, I was like, just dive in and work, kid. Don't waste time with some dumb little sketch of a thing that nobody cares about. Every hour should be accounted for and have some kind of deliverable.
Now, I'm curious. So have you noticed then, so how do you perform when you are warmed up versus when you don't warm up?
Oh, night and day. A page of inks can go from taking 4.5 to 6 hours to 3 hours if I've sufficiently warmed up. And that the warm up could be a 20-minute sketch, half hour sketch, you know, half hour sketch with maybe another 10 minutes of noodling on it, and just to play with it and enjoy the process, enjoy the just being playful with something. So you're talking like 30 minutes, 35 minutes tops. And I've trimmed off 1.5 to 2 hours off of, you know, making the thing. So there's a big payoff on that. But
yeah,
but
there's like built-in incentive right there.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? We don't put that stuff on paper. We never put that stuff on paper. We let that, at least for, I don't. I keep it as like an intellectual concept, but I don't sit down and write out and visualize my time workflow. Until I started using the Emergent Task Planner. So that was when I started to discover things like that, because I wouldn't have, when I wasn't tracking it, when I wasn't measuring it. So another ad for that.
Yeah, that is awesome. I mean, it's, which again, so that's, yeah. And steer me away from all this stuff too. Like these buckets, I mean, I don't know, like, I think they're, you know, they're, you know, they serve some purpose, but we don't have to drive the whole thing based on that.
No, I think they serve as a really good scaffolding to take some of my examples and pull it around, because I think that, you know, a lot of my examples kind of serve multiple functions. It's not just about getting my arm limbered up so that I can draw better. It's also about getting my mind in the right place so that I'm not going to be as frustrated by mistakes. I'm not going to panic as much. Man, I don't know about you, Rob, but when I start to get stressed out and panicked about a deadline, or about, oh, I've only got X amount of hours today and I wanted to get X amount done, it's not happening. Now I'm going to start rushing. I'm not going to answer my phone. I'm going to get annoyed with every email that comes in. Every time something pings me on, you know, whatever site, I'm going to be irritated by it. And then the work suffers as a result of it. I get less done and it doesn't look as good.
Oh, man. I've been just, yeah. I very much feel that. and it's, yeah, it's this strange mindset that, so let's see, would that come from not limbering up? Cause again, here's where this whole topic, it does really border on other workflow management concerns. You know, it's like getting ready to jump into the task, warming up and limbering up, that is a very important concern in and of itself. And I do think that there's like these five buckets involved. As far as places where you can feel friction or remove friction to then be ready to, you know, be effective at the thing you're trying to set forth. But boy, does it really get close to other things like, what you mentioned, the payoff in, how much more, let's see, well, how much more efficient you are if you are warmed up when inking a page versus not. So there's like, that's like intrinsic motivation kind of stuff, right? Where, God, it really feels good to have that time. Or maybe it's extrinsic. Well, no, I don't know if, does anyone come by and say, wow, that was fast?
No. Okay. It's never fast enough.
Oh, gosh. Yes. But I know. Every once in a while, I celebrate a little. I do a little victory dance inside where I'm like, I'm emailing you this, like, a day and a half faster than I thought it was going to, and that you expected it. And then, It's then no victory. No, the victory dance doesn't become like an external party. Oh, well. But the motivation stuff and the I don't know, it really has a lot to do with it. And, I just find that very interesting. Like, why would you pick up this? 'Cause in a way we're talking about, limbering up as like this very useful skill in and of itself, worth adding to a toolbox.
Right, right. Well, but to go to the other points of friction you were talking about, I mean, it's not just about, you talk about intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. Oh, I'm getting work done faster, which is awesome. But it's also about, like when I was talking about preventing stress, doing the warm-up will sometimes align my brain with, it's like we're all familiar with the remember Caesar, thou art mortal, remember Caesar, thou art mortal, right? The guy whispering in Caesar's ear as the parade's going by in his honor. I think we also need to have somebody whispering sometimes that, remember, this is supposed to be a joyful experience. Remember, this is supposed to be a lot of fun. Remember that you're doing this because you love it. And we can, it's, you know, because we take it seriously, and we should, you know, we let that turn into a stressful thing, right? This goes back to something I was talking about in the last episode, is this idea of like people equating anger with passion, right? But the warm-up sketch can align my mind to say, remember, this is supposed to be a joyful, fun thing. Don't sweat it. Not to say don't take it seriously, but remember how that sketch feels. That's what this is supposed to feel like, even if you are stressed and you're under a deadline and you got to get it done, right?
That's really awesome, because you do get to associate that victory with the same, with this task. This task feels awesome.
Yep.
And so, yeah, that's a really, really good point.
A friend of mine once told me, when I was talking about a long-term project, and I think it was when I was getting ready to do the front as a webcomic, and I was like, well, I've mapped it all out. It's going to take 3 years to do. And his response was like, that's a lot of opportunities to get bored with the project, you know? And my response was, but I'm getting to draw my book. Even if it gets boring, I think it'll be easy for me to go, I get to draw a book. I get to draw my book, you know? But at the same time, I totally get, you know, like this is the thing I tell people, young people, when they're like, oh, I want to do like an 8-volume graphic novel set. I'm like, boy, that's a lot of opportunities for you to feel like you're no good and that the work's not, you know, holding up and you're never going to finish. And that's why I always tell them to start with mini comic. So I'm a big believer, what I'm driving at here is I'm a big believer in playing these little psychological tricks on yourself, giving yourself a little mini cycle with a reward at the end, a feeling of reward at the end to remind you of, this is what you're doing in miniature. Here's a microcosm of what you're doing. So keep the faith and all that stuff.
That is, I mean, that's really good. We learn in, you know, evolve in our craft through our experience, and that by adding those micro experiences, again, it's like the small commitments that lead you to be able to deliver on the big ones. I mean, so, okay, when you did that 3-year commitment to yourself, you did that in what, the fifth grade, sixth grade, 12th grade?
I was in my mid to late 20s.
Okay. So maybe you didn't have all these current practices and skills in your toolbox, but you finished a few comics before that, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. But nothing more, as big as that, nothing with as many pages as that before, right? I did like the biggest thing I did up to that point was a 3-issue miniseries. So 66 pages, somewhere in the neighborhood. Everything else I did was a series of short stories, 22 pages here, 18 pages there, 16 pages there. Never did anything. Well, if you want to count like the front mini comics I did back in the early 90s, some of those were 40 pages long. Wow. But when I say mini comics, I mean like digest photocopied comics. But so yeah, I had a good number of pages underneath me, but yeah, you know, it's it took years for me to cycle up to get ready to be able to do something that's that ambitious as a graphic novel. So but yeah, so I've derived a lot of benefit from the warm-up sketch, not only in terms of limbering up my hand, but intellectually preparing me for the cycle of the day. And there's one more benefit. I mean, the benefits are just there's layered. You know, there's tons and tons of benefits to just doing a simple warm-up thing. And one of the things I found is by doing it consistently, you're creating a journal, whether you know it or not, of your aboutness as an artist. What is your artistic eye gravitating towards? Because at least in the example that I'm using here, and I know I've told the story a bunch of times, the warm-up sketch, I try to limit it to, I'm only going to get to learn two things today with this thing. I'm only taking on two challenges, two tiny challenges. Everything else, pick a pose that's easy for you, pick a subject matter you would enjoy drawing, and you could almost do it from memory because you've thought about it so much. Stick with what you know and what you love, and you're only going to learn two things. right? I'm going to learn how to color with crayons today, you know, a little bit by practicing some of my crayon shading. Or I'm going to learn brush pen. Or in the case of lately, I'm sketching in this Android app called Papyrus Beta, or I think it's just called Papyrus now, which is a note-taking app, but has really cool vector drawing abilities in it.
I keep forgetting to download that one. I got to try it out.
I like.
By the way, there's been a huge, awesome upgrade to Sketchbook Pro.
Oh, yeah, I did see that. I did see that. I haven't played around with it yet, though.
It's wonderful.
I heard that there's Copic markers in Sketchbook Pro now.
There's Copic markers, and you can draw in Portrait now, which that's how I hold a device when I draw. Not total tangent, sorry. No. But the, what's the, my case is the, where's the name on it? Totally escaping me here. Anyway, that's so silly. It's the, Moco case, whatever. Anyway, it folds and I can stand up with it and stuff. Or it can stand on its own in the case, like little triangle thing. Yeah. But it's got, so when you flip it open, it has a, this grip.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a very helpful ergonomic thing, whatever. So yes, I love to sketch like that. That grip saved my tail during 24-hour comic day when I wanted to, you know, fall over. I could just walk around and know I'm not going to drop my precious new tablet and stuff. Anyway,
I think I need to get one of those.
Not to overly endorse, but yeah. Anyway,
Moco case. All right,
Moco case. Yeah, but yeah. So you sketch with your
Yeah. So I've got that Samsung Galaxy Note 10.1 tablet.
Yep.
The pressure sensitivity, and I've been using it as my ubiquitous capture device. I'm taking it everywhere I go, and whenever an idea occurs to me, it goes in there. And I've been using Papyrus Beta as my brainstorming sketching application. And one of the reasons I like it is because it's vector, so the files are very small. I can export it as a PDF to Evernote, and then I've got notebooks in Evernote that I use for my capturing all my project notes and then in Papyrus, I can just do sloppy, dumb sketches. But when I get something that's a little bit more refined and this is getting close to what I want, ship it off to Evernote. Evernote's where the real notes live. Papyrus is where all my sloppy brain barfing happens, right? But one of the reasons I like it as a sketching tool is because it's not meant for sketching. So there's no layer support, which I've emailed the developer about and said, like, hey, please put layer support because this would be an awesome drawing app if you did that. And the eraser tool works in a really, really funky way. It works more like in Sketch, where when you drag over, let's say I draw a line across the screen like this, and then I draw another line across the screen like this. If I were to take and erase normally, like right here, it just seems like you just erase part of that line. No, I've touched that line, that entire diagonal line just disappears, right?
Oh, like each line is like an object.
Each line is an object. So when you're sketching in Sketch and then all of a sudden you start erasing, weird things can happen because, oh, I didn't realize this was a continuous line, right? So which creates like a whole new kind of challenge. So like for the warm-up sketches I've been doing in Papyrus is I'm saying I'm learning how to draw with this very unusual drawing paradigm, I guess if you want to call it that. So I don't get to worry about anything else. Just right now, I'm just focusing on capturing shapes that appeal to me for certain kinds of emotional moods and states and imply a certain kind of characteristic about a character. But everything else, stick with what comes easy to you. And then going back to my original point is that by limiting myself in what I'm able to do, limiting my time and limiting my subject matter to just things that I love and things that not overthinking anything and just focusing on learning one specific skill, I wound up creating a log of what my artistic aboutness is. If you go and look at any of my warm-up sketches, there's a pretty consistent theme there. It's guys running and dodging lasers and things blowing up all around them, right?
Yep.
And, you know, it's because I wasn't overthinking it. I was just grabbing what made me feel good and putting it on the page. And so it's all like lighthearted cartoon characters having really, really awesome action. And it gave me that summary point to where I can say to somebody now, what's the Jersey Droz style? Well, as far as I can tell, it's really cute and fun, bright characters having really, really awesome action scenes. right?
That is really cool. So not everything has to be this trail of the giant projects. It's like those micro ones could end up feeding, for instance, like your feedback loop as far as being mindful about what kind of projects you want to go for, or you know, based on the techniques you find that you enjoy most and whatnot. That's really cool. I also like the idea of limiting those variables too. When you're like, okay, I need to warm up, but I need to exercise, and I don't know. It's almost like it's a little different than just a limbering up, right? Because it goes from just limbering up to then execute on a task to like a known task. It's like you're preparing then for like the something new and unknown, or like a new kind of thing that you just, you know, haven't fully had a chance to take on yet, but it's less risky. Because like the limbering up,
because the real goal is just to get myself warmed up for the real work I have to do.
Yep.
And so it occurred to me that, well, if I'm doing this to get my hand loosened up to ink and get my brain aligned to be able to take on creative challenges all day, I might as well get double duty out of it if I can. So what experimentation can I do? So like when I'm doing freelance work for clients, I try to sneak in experimentation in there. You know what I haven't tried yet is this tool. And this is low risk for me because as long as the client is happy with it and pays me money, I really don't care that much about how much I am personally pleased with it, right? If the client, if I've made it to their satisfaction, that's my job. Mm-hmm. This isn't about pleasing me as an artiste. This is about providing a service and trying to do my best at it, but this is where I feel like I got wiggle room to do a little bit of experimentation in there as long as nobody knows that I'm doing it.
I mean, there's parameters. You've agreed upon something that it leaves room for. I mean, it sounds like that there's room left for interpretation.
Yeah, when I was drawing those cards for the Marvel Superhero Squad, nobody said, this is how you have to do it. They said, give me a drawing of Giant Man doing math on a chalkboard. They don't care what tools I'm using. Just make it look good, right? So this is the opportunity for me to try out different tools is what I'm saying. And so like that kind of thinking came into the whole warm-up sketch idea of like, really it's about this, but while I'm there, I might as well try to get that out of it as well. And I didn't know if I was going to get anything out of it. You know, that's why it's low risk, because if I don't learn anything from it, or if I don't really walk away going like, oh, now I really feel like I've got papyrus under my thumb and I can really draw seriously in it, it doesn't matter. What it's about is about capturing ideas. It's about warming up for the day. It's about getting my brain creatively aligned with what needs to be done. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. But I have found myself adopting new tools because of that sort of thing.
Yep. You're broadening your tool skill set as well.
Mm-hmm.
There's a ton of benefits to doing this kind of thing and not just diving in cold. Did you get a chance, Rob, to check out that the Sketchnote handbook article that I linked to in the
I checked out that one you mentioned earlier, but not the Sketchnote handbook. Yeah, what's this about?
Okay, it's in the Google Doc. It's
I got the link here.
Oh, okay, you got it right there. It's rohdesign.com/book. If anybody wants to go to it live right now,
yep.
I have not read this book yet, but I'm getting it because it looks absolutely fascinating. And this came by way of David Say, who blogged about it. And it's a book that it's sort of like what Understanding Comics did by using the comics art form to deconstruct the medium of comics. He's using the sketch notebook to deconstruct why it's important and what benefits we get out of journaling in sketch form.
Ooh, I'm sold. Boom. I'm buying this book. Yeah, I cannot tell you. So I was reading a book on it's called Global UX, right? And part of the what the book was about is doing user experience design in the context of like global audiences and all that stuff. Because I mean, you run into just things that are that really amplify the differences between cultures, including your own blind spots. That, you know, the fact is, I live, you know, in the middle of the US, and you know what, I don't really know what the day in the life is of an office worker in Taiwan who uses a certain application, whatever. Anyway, so like it helps. It provide all sorts of advice as far as breaking out of that and, you know, doing some team things, whatever. But back to the thing that why I was instantly sold on this book is it had these chapter breaks that in a pictorial sense, it was a collage of sketches that pretty much summarized the chapter. That and it was this style, and I've also seen videos of people who can do this live at meetings. I want to do this live at meetings. Like, yeah. This is Kung Fu I need. So anyway,
I remember when I was in high school, I took notes very similar to that style. Not as nice as the way that this book by Mike Rowe is that Mike Rode. Oh, roaddesign.com. Rode. Sign road design, get it. So it's Mike Rohde. I just got his URL.
Yeah, nice.
But anyway, my notebooks didn't look as nice as his when I was in high school. But that was like the way I took notes, where I would use. And I was doing this unconsciously. Like if the teacher said something with like a lot of gusto or emphasis, that's bolded text, right? That's going to be extruded 3D text, right? Because that was something he said with a lot of flourish to it. And then I would also draw what I was seeing in my mind while the teacher was talking. And in this book, he's making the case about how that actually leads to better memory retention. It helps you like crystallize ideas better. Fascinating stuff, you know?
And so this isn't just about limbering up necessarily. It's just about being more limber in a way, right? So you're saying that potentially being able to, I mean, this is cool for communicating things and whatnot, but also just capturing it for yourself and making more connections in your brain for given whatever. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
Well, and I mean, something we've extolled the virtues on the show in the past is ubiquitous capture, note cards, Evernote, et cetera. Having the Samsung tablet with the Wacom digitizer on it has liberated me in my note-taking to go back to sketching notes again, right? And then when I don't have it with me and I'm only stuck with this, you know, I'll take pictures of the things that I sketched. I'm sure you do the same thing. You're nodding knowingly. So, yeah.
Yeah, I have a particular stand I bought too. That's how I pose my stack of cards when I'm taking pictures of them and rifling through them get them into Evernote. There it is. It's a Rubbermaid plate holder that just it also will hold a whole bunch of cards and helps pose them, so it's easy to not have these weird cast shadows and stuff, and just rifle through them while I take pictures.
So I think capturing more, a warm-up exercise can be just a review of your captured stuff. Let me put it that way. So one of the things I'm continuously working on, this is by no means anything that is a reflex habit, it's something I'm always trying to be mindful about, is when the idea occurs to me, grab it. Don't tell yourself you're going to remember it 5 hours from now, because you won't. So, you know, you've got something on you. You've got a card, you've got a phone, you've got a tablet, you've got something that you can grab this idea in. And when the idea is grabbed, even if it's on a card, then it gets digitized somehow afterwards. And then what I do with this is occasionally if the ennui is there and I'm like, oh, this is too big of a day, I can't handle all this stuff, I just want to take a nap. Okay, I did a Thunder Punch Daily a long time ago on this topic of distractions, as using distractions to stay motivated and get more stuff done. Is that's where I'll open up. Okay, let's review one of my Evernote notebooks on a project that I want to work on, and I'm only going to give myself 20 minutes to really search through it. But it's a way to get to crystallize or attempt to crystallize a bunch of random captured things. And try to sum it up in a couple sentences afterwards. Try to grab some of those thoughts and put them together into some kind of cohesive bundle at the end. Just a few sentences. Or just a sketch based on that. And now I've got a warm-up thing done, right? That was a way to intellectually challenge myself like a curveball at the top of this episode. Here's a bunch of random note cards for Boulder and Fleet Adventures for Hire, the graphic novel, Jersey. Grab 6 of them and try to make a coherent thing out of it. And then I try to do that, you know, do either a quick sketch about something or write out a few sentences about something. And then again, I have that emotional high of, whew, The kid's got something. The kid can do something, right? All right, now I'll go take on this unpleasant task that I got to do.
So that is, yeah, I like that process. And I felt something pretty similar when I was doing a lot of my end of year planning and going back through and mining my Evernote and other notes and whatnot. I'm curious though, like, so do you ever find yourself like shortcutting the practicing where you just go back on, well, things you've done and observed or what have you, or maybe prior practice sessions that you've captured and then just feel satisfied from that? And maybe that then all of a sudden you're ready.
Can you hold tight for just like 4 seconds while I do a visual example of this?
Yes. So while Jersey's fetching that, I found a, so there's an app that, that is, I don't know, I'm kind of stoked about for iOS called, it's called Paper. Mm. And it has like this, it's very much like a moleskin kind of metaphor in the UI, tough to control. Well, anyway, you can page through it and stuff. And, but without the pressure sensitivity on the pen, it's not as nice. And if it had undo and redo, I would use the heck out of it on the iPad.
It doesn't have undo and redo?
No. So it's a free app, but they sell you brushes. And I don't think undo and redo comes from the brushes. So I have to assume that's a feature coming. That's a different mindset. I mean, you don't have undo when you ink stuff, right? In physical media.
Actually, no, that's true. That's one of the things that with one of my recent warm-up / exploratory sketches in Papyrus is that because it's so hard to erase things that I was like, well, I could just draw over it with white ink, right? That's what you do on paper. Mm-hmm. And then once I did that, I realized, wait a second, this is a sketchbook where I have the full RGB gamut at my disposal. Why am I just bothering with just black lines? Right. You know, it's like when I'm just dealing with a sketchbook, I mean, obviously I could take a whole paint set with me, but here's, I've got the whole paint set in this guy. Right. So,
mm-hmm.
But to your earlier question, do I ever go back and reflect on the previous warm-ups as a means of a mental warm-up? Yeah. Right. So like, here's just a sample of some of those dumb warm-up sketches I was talking about, right? And I've got stacks and stacks of these things, which is a record of, you want to know why I got these stacks and stacks? I try to sell them. Nobody buys them. But but this means that I've got all these stacks of, you know, drawings that I get to go back and look at and go, well, wait a second, kid. You know, you pulled all this off.
Mm-hmm.
I can do other stuff. So, yeah, it can be a motivational exercise again.
Exactly. Remind yourself that you're capable.
Yeah. So yeah, I do that occasionally. I've got a special drawer where I keep all of these things in my studio.
Cool. Me too.
The big idea was I wanted to throw out this idea of sketching as note taking, not just sketching as I'm going to make a sketch that I can sell on my big cartel website, but sketching as a means to just capture some notes and ideas, and that itself can be a warm up exercise. So.
Yeah, and possibly a powerful storytelling skill, depending on your need and whatnot. Once in a while, you'll see. I don't know. I come across this once in a while. I'm sure you have too. Like if someone goes to a really cool talk and then they will summarize it in their moleskin or whatever and take a picture of it, and it's very much a close relative to that. To that awesome book that I'm totally going to buy as soon as we're done podcasting.
Which, once again, is called The Sketchnote Handbook. Yes, mm-hmm. I'm going to purchase it myself. I got other stuff on here, but in the interest of time, I want to give you a chance to talk about some of your different limbering up things.
Oh, geez. Limbering up. So, I mean, it can be anything from, this is where I meant, I don't know. My interpretation of the topic, you know, did wander toward like motivation and whatnot. So sometimes limbering up is about feeling ready and that lack of inspiration kind of thing. And I will like possibly, you know, rifle through some old projects, or I'll play, you know, guitar fretter or whatever. And, you know, I'll get myself into something that I've done already to get familiar with it, to, cause once in a while, gosh, there's a project management aspect of this too, where sometimes the next task isn't known. And it's I need to take something from a goal on the list where now I have time to address this goal, but the project's so young, I haven't broken it out into enough details to know what the heck to tackle. And so that's a big thing in and of itself. Which
huge one, Rob. That is a huge pain point. As a guy who's looking at some new projects in the face for 2013, that's a gigantic pain point for me. Where do you begin?
Yeah, where do you begin? And so sometimes it's a matter of I look at similar things I've done, and instead of just a general feeling of confidence or familiarity and like, yeah, okay, psyching up, you know, that I can do it. It's more of the intellectual, well, what was the journey in making that thing? And what were some of the best planning exercises I did to help bring that about? And so that'll inform like how much I do as far as, you know, what level of detail on a project plan and estimating and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which can help. And then of course, with that, you think there's a natural order of construction for the project. And, you know, I can then pick something from the top or near the top of the list as what I need to focus on. And then I can warm up to do that, you know, to tackle that whatever thing, which depending on the skill I need to use or access, my kind of warm up will vary quite a bit. Like if I need to do writing, sometimes what I'll do to get myself started is I will use a speech to text capture tool, like Dragon Naturally Speaking. Although I don't use that anymore because I've upgraded to Mountain Lion and that broke. however, Mountain Lion has built in speech to text. And so I have, if I double tap my function key in any text field, boom. Anyway, so what I'll do is I'll just start generating text and trying to, a little bit like the trick where I'm podcasting, is I'll use a different skill to help boost me for that current task and push me along. So I think, well, how do I start podcasting? I'm going to talk a bunch of things and create some text because I need to get into a writing mindset. Anyway, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, anyway.
No, that's good. That's good. You got to start in world 1-1 before you get to world 1-2, right?
Yeah. And if you're inventing worlds, you have to make a plan for, you know, all the different worlds and areas.
Yep. Yeah, one of the things I'm trying to suss out right now with this new project that I'm looking at is, where do I start? Am I going to start with themes? Am I going to start with plot? Or am I going to start with characters? Am I going to start with the abstract idea of the thing? Am I going to start with the world of the thing and like the plot that goes along with that world? Or am I going to start with what are some interesting characters that we'd want to follow? And in the end, I know from experience that it's going to be an amalgamation of those three things. I'm going to be jumping back and forth consistently as I develop all the different things and as each development informs the other two things. But where is the starting point? Mm-hmm. Right? So I'm trying to figure that out right now. And I've been trying a lot of different kinds of warm-ups and limbering up exercises to get me thinking about all three of those things so I can find that first little hook to make you go, ah, that's it, go.
Gosh, there is like the, so in the mind bucket, I do actually like to divide it up among those three different ways of mapping cognition, where you've got the, you know, the emotional brain, you've got the rational brain, and you've got the sort of survival, you know, lizard brain kind of thing. And I think, well, which one is going to help, you know, if I'm having a motivation issue, I think, well, which one is going to help me move forward? And or which one could, if I did something related. So for instance, like I might actually go play a round of a like a popular social word game, right? And I might send in a move with, you know, where I'm playing against a friend. And that little intellectual stimulation, all of a sudden, cool. I feel ready. I got moving.
That was one of the things I had on my list here, indulgences. Giving yourself time to engage in activities that you lose yourself in. I've used this a lot in the past, and I've got something for takeaways on this topic if we have time. Providing that I use whatever energy I gain from that or whatever, or like immediately, or I reflect on what it was that made me get lost in it. Because that becomes more arrows in the quiver, more tools in the toolbox for getting you out of those scrapes where you look at the blank page and go, where do I begin? So it's not about, I'm not a big fan of the whole turning your brain off. I am a big fan of massaging the brain into a state, but not turning it off. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So something you mentioned earlier that I identify with way too much is the whole, I've had to develop, checking in with myself in enough ways to watch if I'm getting too stressed about all these different things I'm working on. And, that's like one of the sort of awareness executive level skills of, you know, just trying to nurture that and notice, well, how, it, you know, perhaps I set up for myself too many context switches in a day, or, you know, too many tasks, or, you know, again, that thing where you mentioned, in a way, when you write down a plan, so you've committed to something and then failing to deliver upon that, whether or not it was realistic to begin with, still might cause some dissonance, you know, that good old cognitive dissonance. When the inside of, you know, inside mapping, you know, doesn't connect to the external. And, developing that awareness and that sense of detecting, like, okay, I'm getting too stressed. And I try to use that because normally my primary mode of operating is saying, like, how do I psych up? It's always about the psych up, never about the mellow out.
Yep.
And, you know, the whole idea that it seems unintuitive, like the slow down to do more type of thing. And, yet I know that that's a weakness. So I choose to, you know, practice doing exercises that force me to do that. Mm-hmm. And I purposely do stuff like, little casual games once in a while to, It's a lot like many of the exercises that pertain to doing user-centric design is I try to shift my perspective. Get out of my current rut, shift my perspective through that fresh look at things. Hopefully that can assist me with getting ready.
Yep.
If that makes sense. I don't know.
Oh, like, it totally does. It totally does.
Game or, you know, going for a walk or.
Yeah. Whatever. And I think that this is what some people think that they're talking about. Or this is what, when some people are talking about what they think is inspiration, they're really talking about this, is a shift in perspective, right? Mm-hmm. And a mental readiness to do the thing. It's not that, oh, I need the muses to inform me. I need that special magical part of my brain that I can't touch to activate again, and then I can get over this writer's
block. Because if you actually could touch it, it might hurt you.
Yeah. But maybe it's something where you can actually train yourself and when you could detect when it's not working to, you know, detach from it, disconnect, go for a walk, slow down a little bit, change your perspective, and then you come back to it again, afresh and quote unquote inspired again, right? So,
yep.
I think we walked around some of the on the ground stuff pretty good. Do you want to get to, do you have any final thoughts before we go to takeaways? Let me just say it that way.
I want to say one other thing is too, I use the heck out of music.
Yeah.
And particularly metal where it, I get that's what helps me gear up. And, but I notice, you know, sometimes I try to not do that as well, but oof, I miss it when I don't. So
the thing about music is it's a really quick way to know what puts you in your center, right?
Mm.
It's a really quick and visceral way to know, like, oh, that's it. That's the stuff that reflects me somehow, or I identify with the values or attitude or expression in that particular kind. right? And not that kind.
Whatever it is. And the thing with music, it can be something that is very literal. Like they are saying something that you actually want to hear. And it's those like words soundtrack. And that message. What's that?
Like the Bloodsport soundtrack.
Exactly. Or it could be just the feeling, the essence of the, you know, maybe it's in a really positive key, or maybe it's in a dissonant key, and you you get energy that for you is harmonious. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
No, that's a good one to bring up, because I often forget to do that in my own life. I get so hung up on the feeding my brain information kind of thing, where I'm just listening to podcasts or talk radio or audiobooks. Mm. Constantly when I'm in my studio, and then every once in a while I'll be like, or like I'll be like, my iTunes will like flick past the it's done with this playlist, now it clicks over to the next thing, and it's music, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. You know, there's such a thing as like putting yourself into an emotional state based on, you know, the way something feels.
Mm-hmm.
So if I forget that, probably somebody else forgets that too, but it can be a huge thing. So yeah, I have certain playlists which are for different moods. This is a spinning down playlist. This is a spinning up playlist, right?
That's a good idea. I should have more spinning down playlists. Yep.
Yeah, I have an end of the day one that I pull out every once in a while, which is like, all right, now it's time to calm down.
This calming down sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
I'll have to make note of it.
It does wonders for your heart. You'd be surprised, Rob.
Hmm.
You know when that left arm gets numb every once in a while?
Yes.
Okay, so right. with that, I will say, oh, I guess I'm closing out with the same music this time.
We thought we got out of trouble. Boom, more trouble.
Well, because we still got a little bit of stuff to get through here yet. So much then for the main topic. We've got takeaways real quick, and actually it's related to the main topic, and I only want to spend 5 minutes on this one, Rob, because mm-hmm. it's not that big a deal. But when we were talking about indulgences a moment ago, so one of the things that happened to me was I became acquainted with what I think is the most diabolical marketing machine I have ever seen. I mean, at first I said, I haven't seen anything like this since the 80s. Now I'm saying, no, this surpasses any diabolical marketing machine that we had in the 80s. Now, remember, the 80s was all about buy, buy, buy. Next episode mm-hmm. of Transformers comes out. Oh, Optimus Prime, my cars have a secret. They can turn into a great big giant guy. Tell your parents, kids, go out and buy the Stunticons mm-hmm. tomorrow. You know,
buy them all.
What's yeah. that?
Yeah, exactly. And buy them all because, you know what? Your dude doesn't have an arm.
Yep.
And yeah.
Got to collect them all. Does. And every season of the show came out with an even more bigger, more exciting, more expensive version. Oh, this season of G.I. Joe, they got the USS Flag. It's a 7-foot long aircraft carrier that you can buy and keep in your bedroom, kids. Oh. Who didn't want that thing, right? Well, this Christmas, I got the Skylanders game for the Nintendo Wii. Have you seen this thing?
What's funny is I've heard about it. Because I often live, so one of my hobby interests is video games, of course, and playing them, not just designing and whatnot, but I don't have as much time to play them, so I live vicariously through video game podcasts, and I've heard them talk about Skylanders, like, you know, for a while.
This thing is devilish. It is absolutely, and on the one hand, like, this is where I get to that reflection, because as I was walking away from, because I got really sucked into this game. And I don't often allow myself to do that. Like, Metroid is the only game I've ever, like, given myself permission to get really sucked into. And everything else, like, you don't have time, dude. You don't have time to do this. So don't get invested, right? Get the dumb ones like the Lego games where you can just play casually and then walk away.
Mm-hmm.
So we get this game where, just for anybody who hasn't heard about it, the premise is that it's an adventure game for young kids where the characters are represented as action figures like this. And you put them on this external device called the Portal of Power, which is plugged in via USB to the back of the Nintendo Wii. And that's how the character gets into the game. You don't have a character unless you have an action figure. Already starting to see how evil this thing is. And guess how many characters there are? Tons. And to unlock them, you have to buy the figure. Already I'm looking at this thing going like, ah, well done, you know, evil overlords.
Mm-hmm.
But then they dive into this conceit of, they starts out with this like cinematic thing, and it's like, long ago the Skylanders fought this evil army, and in defeating the evil army, they themselves were cast into other dimensions. They were lost to time and space, and it shows what other dimension they go to. It shows them hanging on a store peg in a store. In other words, the toy you buy is the guy. It's not a toy. This is the guy. You just saved him.
When you put him, saved him.
When you put him on the portal, it's like, oh, well done, Portal Master. You've saved this guy, allowing him to return to Skyland. You know?
Wow.
I know, right? It's like oh, wait, the story itself is built to make me say, well, I gotta go save them all now. It's not about catching them all and collecting them all and hoarding them all. I gotta save my friends.
This, you know? Yeah. It's exactly, this isn't greed. This is, you know,
I want to help.
Exactly. It's helpful greed.
And there's more. I mean, like, it's the whole idea of building unlocks into a physical thing. So you can't, it makes it more difficult to hack or work around it, right? The collectability feature of like all these cute little guys that are like representations of the guys on the screen. There's all sorts of leveling up tricks in there, and there's tricks they play where they make levels so hard that you have to have multiple characters in order to get past them. It's, or so it seems, either that or go through like a lot of grinding. But anyway, it was a wonderful revelatory experience where I found myself spending a little too much time on it. You know, just enough where I was starting to get worried about like, hey, I got stuff I should be doing. And then it made me stop and say, what was it? What is it about this thing? And that's when I started breaking down. Okay, well, there's this wonderful marketing engine. There's this wonderful story about using these toys as a metaphor of being real things. And then the designs of the characters are just, some of them are, but a lot of them are like, ha, 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 they're just great. so it takes everything that's great about Pokemon and everything that was great about early 80s toy lines, merges it with video games. And then worst of all, so like there's these sections of the game that only certain elemental characters can open, right? It's like, oh, you need a water character to open this part of the game. I'm like, oh, now I gotta go get a water guy, you know? Yeah, you see where I'm going with this? And like,
oh yeah, that is one thing I heard, is that does it even get more granular than that, where, or perhaps it's sort of a gray area where this level would ideally be solved with someone with this given capability. Yep. Maybe you could get around it. But then sometimes there's hard limitations where they have to be of a certain type or nature or something.
Right. Like, oh, you need a giant for this one. You need a magic element character for that one. But yeah, then there's rooms and levels where this is really designed for this specific guy, right? Like getting the guy also unlocks certain things that were only meant for that character. And then on top of it, this is even more wicked. They built in commercials in the game where you found a soul gem, and the soul gem is a special gem that unlocks a very specific talent for a very specific character. Oh, you don't have that character yet? Well, would you like to watch a preview of what this thing will do with that character? And yes, I watched the damn preview, and it's a commercial for the toy that makes me go, gosh, I gotta go out and get that guy. He's got guns for fingers, you know. So,
oh man.
But, you know, the takeaway is that these things are always opportunities for study, right? I got sucked in, I got hooked, and it was fun, and it was embarrassing, and it was delightful. But then the important thing was I had to step back and go, okay, well, what is it that's going on here? What is it that's sucking me in? Let's pick it apart now. So that's all.
Well, I mean, this really reminds me of, related to goal planning, related to this saying, you know what? Taking indulgences can lead to things that, you know, you realize more about your taste, and you know, because you are practicing various aspects of your craft. I mean, all these other experiences can feed into it. I mean, artists use people from their lives as characters in their stories and all that kind of stuff. It's just carrying, it's gaining, it's using your experience as raw material and mining it. And I've had that in mind and still shied away from something that I've heard wonderful things about for many years now, which is MMORPGs. I have never played an MMORPG. And I'm a game designer. You know, like I, you know, that's kind of bad, right?
Yeah, actually, and it seems like something you should be studying for work purposes, right?
And you know, what's funny is you know, I've read other people's papers on them. I interview my friends who play them and I ask questions. I'm prodding them for more info about, oh yeah, well, how does this work? You know, and, you know, finding out like what's motivating them and the kind of things that I would, you know, I like to discover as far as, well, what's the human connection in that task and what's exciting and, how did they learn it? And MMORPGs are another, part of how, the pedagogy in World of Warcraft I hear is amazing. Like mm-hmm. I should go study that just for, well, learning more about teaching in an interactive setting. Mm-hmm. Anyway. And so I added it to my list. I'm doing it. I'm going to play an MMORPG and I haven't done it yet, but I've given myself permission to finally. So
yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Giving yourself permission to, with the sort of the, acknowledgement that part of this is work-related study and not in like a tongue-in-cheek kind of way, you know. when I spent $10 I didn't have on another Skylander figure because I wanted to open up a thing in the game, you know, I was kind of wryly saying to myself, well, this is kind of work-related because me knowing about this game will probably come in handy in my classroom experiences dealing with 12-year-olds, right? Right? You know.
Well, yes, and...
But in your case, this is actually no. I think that's the big takeaway is that indulgences are an opportunity for study. So what I want to do, Rob, because we're getting close. Oh, Ravage is playing on my keyboard and messing with the Google Doc. I want to get to our new feature and I want to play a theme song for it. And I'm trying to find. I don't have anything finished yet. And this is where maybe the listeners can give us a theme song for it. But I tried to find something that sounded kind of soaring and challenging, and I came up with this.
Well, that's appropriate.
The Lean into Art quests, right?
Yes. Quests? Lean into Art? Are you talking Skylanders or Lean into Art?
Well, it's funny. We discussed this very thing while I was in the midst of the Skylanders addiction. And I was doing lots of quests to raise my hit points experience and get more gold so I could buy some of those magical upgrades from the special fairy shop so my guy could do more stuff. So yes, anybody who's ever played video games of that nature knows what a quest is for, but most of us know what a quest is, right? Sending a person mm-hmm. off on a task to do a seemingly small specific thing, and you always come back different.
Exactly. A transformative experience, but not too dissimilar to even the topic of this episode where we're talking a lot about practice and we're talking a lot about warming up. And I mean, so the scope of a quest, I mean, it could be the 12 trials of Hercules or something.
Oh yeah.
I don't think we're going to quite go that far, but at the same time, I mean, there are so many fun exercises to take on. And I think, as we were designing this feature, this is a new thing. Like we're going to do this every episode of the podcast, right, Jersey?
Yeah.
You know, we realized, well, there's just a lot of fun things and you know, we're just beginning. So like, this is our Skylanders 1.0 version of the quests. And it is a thing that's meant to evolve, but at the core of it, we've got a cool task.
Yeah. So I think this is the perfect episode topic to launch such a thing with, because you're right. This ties into the whole idea of like, it's a simple exercise to sort of align yourself with whatever creative project that you're working on at the time. It's not meant to be a big deal. It's not meant to be something that's going to take an untold amount of hours. It shouldn't take very long at all. As a matter of fact, I would even say, don't overthink it. Set an egg timer and give yourself 20 minutes. Don't go any further than that unless you really want to, right? But I don't want to be too prescriptive on like what the parameters of the actual execution of the thing is, but you're going to have a time limit in the sense of when you complete the quest, you can share your work with us if you want, and we will discuss it and critique it on the show. So there will be two new segments on the show. There will be the issuing of the new quest and the responding to the previous quest. the quests will not close. You can do, if like you're discovering these quests, like let's say you're listening to this episode in January 2014 and like, oh man, this is a year old. Now I can't do it. Yeah, you can. If we're still around, still doing podcasts, you can still interact with us about it. It's just we won't discuss them on the show. The only way to get your quest materials discussed on the next Lean Into Art cast, which will be, what is it, January 17. So it'd have to be January 16th will be the deadline for this one, right?
Yeah, exactly. So,
so you have until then to complete the quest.
So what is this quest and how do I go about completing it or participating in this? I'm super curious.
Well, Rob, you were very kind and very generous and let me choose the first quest. And I'm calling quest one Mecha Sound. So that'd be like the special side adventure you'd have to go on in the game. And what is Mecha Sound about? You're going to do the following, any or all of the following. You're going to design a sound effect for a rusty old tractor starting up, an air conditioner in use, and someone making an espresso. You're going to capture the sounds of those scenes and you're going to design them. How you design them, you can do it on paper, you can do it digitally. I don't care. Whatever tools you use to make this thing into an image that reflects that kind of sound. Now there's more, these will be in the show notes for you too. You don't have to write this down. But this will be at leanintoart.com. Now, there are different ways you can engage in the quest. You could take on the heroic challenge. Heroic challenge is to simply create the sound effect on paper or digitally. Black and white or color, doesn't matter. You can also, or collect items of excellence. You can find examples by others that demonstrate good mechanical sound designs, right? So let's say you don't want to do the sound design of the tractor or you try it. I can't really capture what a rusty old tractor sounds like. But here's an example of John Workman doing a really, really cool car turning over sound effect, right? From a comic. You can, so that would be your item of excellence that you can send to us. And then the last one, and this one goes for anybody in the quest. This is where you can help out other questers, is link power-ups. Provide a link to an article or tutorial that will help others in their quest. Okay? So heroic challenge, you make the thing. Item of excellence, you find items worthy of discussion on the general topic. And then link power-ups is, hey, there's this great walkthrough on how to do a sound design in whatever, name your program, Adobe Photoshop, Manga Studio, etc. This will help. And then how do you get this to us? Use the hashtag LIAQuest1. So Lean Into Art, LIA Quest 1. Use that hashtag, you know, on Twitter, I guess would be the main way. If you're not on Twitter, you can also use Google Plus to get in touch with us. But just make sure to use that tag to let us know that this is the this is the item for this specific quest. And you can also use the general one, LIA Quest, as well. If like you're doing it after the fact, if you're doing it months from now, or if you just have like a general.
Yeah, just want to talk about lean into our quest. So yeah, LIA quest. And if you want to draw attention to a specific quest, like, you know what? Boom, mission complete. Or, you know, this is me completing that quest. Whatever you want to say in there, send a link to the thing you posted. Twitter or Google Plus actually each have great built-in ways to post images. Images are going to often be the kind of thing that we'll do. Like it'll be something visual, likely, you know, most often. Anyway, a lot of quests, you could still take a picture of something or what have you. So, I mean, there's a, whatever. I mean, so there's great mechanisms in Google Plus and in Twitter to do this and to then draw attention to which quest that you're working on. So yep. Leah Quest 1.
And then using the general Leah Quest, I think is good for anybody who wants to follow along on Twitter. Like let's say you find a link power up and you want to share it with everybody who's questing, use both hashtags so that other people who are, you know, want to be aware of what everybody else is doing on the quest can follow along. By just doing a search for that hashtag. That's why we decided to use the hashtags, right? So everybody can play along. And not in like a forced kind of like, oh, everybody get into this room and do it together. Everybody can do it in their own rooms and they can just kind of look over the shoulders of everybody else while they're questing.
Exactly.
Well.
It gives me a good reason to bring up a search stream again, or, you know, I have to figure out which Twitter client I want to use that's going to, figure out how to get Google Plus to do good, hashtag searches. I've never played with that, so that'll be fun too. Mm. Anyway, neat. So all all you got to do to participate. I plan on doing this one too. So
me too.
It's fun. You're both a quest giver and a quester, Jersey. That rocks.
And then I've got the first link power up to share with everybody as well. Lean Into Artcast episode 14. Going back into the archives, an old episode, but we did a video show on my process and thinking of sound design. And I think we walked through, no, you did too. We both walked through our particular approaches to it. You were showing how you letter an illustrator, and I was showing how I letter an illustrator. And I believe we talked pretty extensively about sound theory as well. So that'd be a good place to start if you want to get a refresher course on thinking about this particular quest. And then the deadline again is January 16th. You got to get it to us by then if you want it discussed on the show. And we will be happy to take examples from you guys and critique them and discuss and generally, you know, reflect on the quest before handing out the new one.
Yeah. And so it's kind of, you know, those of us that go through that initial finish line, it's like the first people who finished quests in whatever. I mean, you Borderlands 2 that came out recently, or, you know, pick a game, right? The first people that finish it, well, that's, you know, y'all get to have little victory party all at the same time. Yeah. But that doesn't keep other people from doing it either. So it's open.
Yeah. So cool. Well, I'm excited about this. I'm excited to see what people make for the first quest, and especially because it's a topic that's near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, me too. That's a very appropriate, Jersey. You are, yeah, that's it, so into the sound topic. I mean, it almost bears like a tagline for your brand.
Yeah, it's getting to be a little bit of almost a caricature of myself, you know. But yeah. Yeah, I wonder if you're right. Okay, well then, hey, guess what? Quest has been issued. Another thing that you could do to get bonus points on the quest is if you guys want to submit some ideas for a intro outro for the questing segment of the show. although Rob is a capable musician, I can always just add more stress to his bucket list or his buckets of concerns and say, like, hey, come up with some kind of questing music. Like a lot of trumpets and more cowbell. So thank you, Rob, for this discussion today.
Yeah, thank you, Jersey. Thanks for, this was a fun topic, and thanks for kicking off the quest. I can't wait to see what comes of it.
Yeah, me too. And we should say that, you know, as we close out with our whole bit about if you enjoyed the show, here's the things you could do in order to interact with it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pick a new one today. Sign up for the newsletter, because Rob has been putting together some pretty awesome newsletters, and there's been extra exclusive content in there. That you can't get anyplace else. When I say extra exclusive content, I mean podcasts that you can't get anyplace mm-hmm. else. So if you subscribe to the newsletter, that's the one way that you can support the show. The other one I'm going to say that is absolutely free is go to iTunes, give us a star review. You don't even have to write anything. Just pick however many stars you think the show deserves. That'll help raise our visibility to other people who are searching for this kind of stuff. And or you can just give this video on YouTube a thumbs up. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel. That might also be nice too. So with that, I will say Happy New Year. Welcome to 2013. Welcome to the new Lean Into Art quest. And thank you, Rob. I have been Jersey Drozd of leanintoart.com and Jersey on Twitter.
And I have been Rob Stenzinger, also of leanintoart.com and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter.
Oh, okay. I meant to pull up the custom overlay and then say, okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.